McAdam Safe House, Northern Kentucky.
Do you really expect to get away with this?
I'd say we already have.
The President of the United States.
Yeah, I see him there. I know who he is. And we have him. Soon to be ex-president. Been a hell of a day.
Do you really believe it's gonna be this simple? Kidnapping the president isn't gonna get Gardner what he wants. It doesn't work like that.
This isn't over yet. The general has it all worked out. Removing the president is just the start.
And everything else is just gonna fall into place? What about the vice president, Congress, the Senate, military chiefs of staff? You're gonna kidnap them as well?
The general has—
Rinelli, the general is living on Fantasy Island. Is the man so naive he thinks this is all you have to do to take over? This is America, not some third world dictatorship where they change the CEO every other week.
It's all been arranged. General Gardner has military allies. Men from every arm of the service is backing him. When we commandeer the media and the utilities, he'll address the whole country and
tell them what, Rinelli? That General Chase Gardner's in control? That he's running the country now? That he's gonna solve all their problems? Save us from the threat of terrorism and cure the Iraq crisis?
People don't trust government anymore. They've been screwed over too many times. They need someone in charge who can give them what they want.
And line his pockets with money from the Iraqi oil fields at the same time.
We need that oil to keep the military running. The minute we show we're weak, we lose everything.
Rinelli, I'll give Gardner one thing. He can work his bullshit on you.
Rinelli crossed to stand over Brignola.
I've had enough of your mouth, mister. Maybe I didn't hit you hard enough last time.
Rinelli?
Rinelli turned at the sound of Gardner's voice.
General.
Don't fall for it. He's just trying to get inside your head.
Yes, sir.
Have all your people checked in recently?
All accounted for, sir.
Good. I'll try McAdam again. Damn you, Rod, pick up.
Maybe I should go outside and take another look around.
Gardner nodded. He took a moment to stare across the living room. Two of Rinelli's men stood guard over the president and Hal Brignola. Outside were six more on roving patrols. The two captives sat in low armchairs, wearing handcuffs and ankle restraints. Outside, the early morning was brightening the sky. Pale mist lay in the timbered hollows of the Kentucky Hill Country.
You look a little stressed, Chase. This not working out as well as you hoped?
Oh, it's early in the game yet.
I don't believe he's enjoying this as much as he was last night.
That makes two of us, Hal.
We'll get out of this, sir.
Oh? Who've you got in mind? I don't see a big green guy in torn pants tearing up the trees.
The analogy to the Hulk made Brignola smile. That very moment, he had been thinking about Carl Lyons. And, coincidentally, Carl Lyons was thinking of Brignola as he lowered his binoculars.
How many, Carl?
Enough. I counted four. Could be others around the front. They're carrying M4s, handguns too, and they're wearing TACCOM units.
Don't think they're up here hunting raccoons, then.
We've got the right place. I just saw Rinelli doing a tour, checking out the guards.
Juan Canales made a final check of his M16, removing the magazine and inspecting the loads before he locked it back in place.
Hey, I think I hear a vehicle coming.
Lyons raised his glasses and focused in on the big silver-gray SUV as it crawled around the final bend in the rough approach trail. Just before it moved out of his vision, he managed to get a close look at the man sitting beside the driver.
Now we've got three jokers out of the pack. Senator Ralph Justin.
Things could be getting close. Pity McAdam isn't here to join the party.
That guy has enough on his mind right now.
Time for us to go be party poopers.
Lyons activated his TACCOM.
You with us, Jack?
Just sitting here in Dragon Slayer waiting for you chumps to shake the lead out.
Add one more to the guest list. Senator Justin has entered the building.
Time to reel him in.
Lyons turned to his partners.
The only ones I give a damn about are Hal and the President. The rest of them are expendable as far as I'm concerned.
How do you want to do this?
As fast as we can, Paul. I know McAdam is locked down, but I don't want to risk my life on that staying secret. If Gardner gets a hint his game is about to be canceled, he might decide to cut his losses and do something stupid. So we hit fast and we hit hard. Go for front and back entrances. First there goes in before our time runs out.
Any preferences?
Give me 2 minutes, then go. If any shooting starts before time's up, make your move. Don't wait.
They ran a swift time check. Lyons pulled back into the dense shrubbery behind them and started his wide circling of the lodge and Rinelli's armed guards.
I haven't heard a thing from him. I tried every half hour on my way here.
What do you think, General?
I'm starting to get a feeling that this Jacoby thing was a trap. Those Justice sons of bitches got their hands on McAdam and he told them where we were to save his own skin. Did you set this up, Brugnola?
With my hands cuffed and my ankles restrained? How would I do that, General?
Isn't it time you reconsidered your position?
Isn't it time you shut your goddamn mouth? You're finished.
The President glanced across at Ralph Justin, and the Senator had the grace to lower his gaze.
The hell with this. Time to make that call. The units should be in position any time now.
Gardner crossed to a black attaché case sitting on a small table. He opened it to expose a sleek satellite communication unit. The unit was programmed into the Gardner Global Network, the call he would make being simultaneously transmitted to each of his military commanders. He picked up the handset.
This is our day, gentlemen.
From outside the lodge at the front came the crackle of autofire. Ranelli's earpiece burst into life and his face turned scarlet.
It stopped them, for Christ's sake.
What is it?
Intruders, General.
Ranelli snatched up the M16, propped against the wall, and cocked the weapon. Reaching inside his jacket, Gardner pulled out his holstered M9. More gunfire sounded, this time from the rear of the lodge. Ranelli pushed by Justin and made for the front entrance. There was a crackle of autofire and a stream of slugs thudded against the outer wall, extending on to shatter one of the front windows, throwing glass inside the room. As Ranelli paused by the door, he glanced through a side window and saw one of his men on the ground, blood already staining the front of his shirt. Ranelli reached for the handle and yanked it free, swinging the door open and stepping out onto the wide wooden porch. Plunkinellis and Schwartz were 4 seconds short of the 2-minute wait when they heard the crackle of autofire from the front of the lodge.
Let's move!
They broke cover and cut across the ground, their destination the rear door to the sprawling lodge. Schwartz spotted movement off to their left, a dark-clad man raising an M4 to his shoulder, tracking in on Plunkinellis' running figure. Schwartz hauled up short, raising his own weapon. He caught the distant gunner in his sights and fired a 3-round burst that hit the target in the chest. The man floundered backward, trying to maintain his balance. He managed until Schwartz hit him a second time and laid him down flat. Plunkinellis tripped when his foot caught a snaking root.
Oh, shit!
The fall had saved him when one of the guards had fired on him. The slugs were close, too close. Plunkinellis, aware of his luck, scrambled for what cover he could find while seeking the man who had fired. His fall had drawn out the guard, believing he had hit his target. He started in to check out the man he thought he had shot, giving Plunkinellis time to pull his M16 into target acquisition and return fire. He caught the guard in the left hip, saw a burst of dark flecks erupt from the wound. Plunkinellis fired again, punching a burst into the target's middle chest. The man went down. Pushing upright, Plunkinellis looked for his partner and caught a flicker of movement close to thick brush. A man stepped into the open, rifle to his shoulder, as he drew down on Schwartz. Plunkinellis took a chance and fired from the hip, clipping the shooter's right arm, pulling his muzzle around a fraction and firing a couple more bursts. In the short time between his first and second burst, the shooter got off a single round. Schwartz put down his target with a keen headshot, then turned under the impact of the enemy gunner's only shot. The slug burned across his left side, cracking a rib in passing. Schwartz fell to his knees, clasping his left hand over the wound. Plunkinellis ran over to his partner, activating his TACCOM.
Jack! Get in here fast. No time for playing hide-and-seek any longer. Rear of the lodge. Gadget's caught one in the side. Come get him. I need to back Carl.
Roger that. On my way.
Go ahead, Paul. Go!
Lyons emerged from the thick brush close to the front of the lodge. It lay to his right. The silver-gray SUV was parked alongside two black 4x4s. There was an insistent small voice inside Lyons' head telling him to get this done before Gardner decided to set his game into action. If the general managed to press the button marked go, and Stony Man failed to initiate moves against all the players, there might still be casualties. Identification of the conspirators had been made. Stony Man had been forced to walk softly until they were sure the President and Hal Brugnola were in safe hands before they gave the go-ahead to move against Gardner's people. It had become a stalemate, a period of biding time so that one call didn't galvanize a response from the opposition, while hoping that the same didn't come from the enemy. It took walking an extremely fine line. The ultimate decision about the right moment to strike was snatched from Carl Lyons as he emerged from the brush and made his run for the lodge. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw a dark figure break from the trees to his right. The armed guy reached to activate his comm unit even as he pulled up his weapon. Lyons didn't hesitate. He triggered his M16 and knocked the guy off his feet with a burst, following him down and laying in a second burst to keep him there. A second gunner showed around the rear of the SUV, already speaking into his comm unit, dragging his M4 off his shoulder. Lyons hit him on the run, the impact of the 5.56mm rounds wrenching him off balance. The ABLE team leader kept firing, his shots blowing out messy exit wounds. As the man went down, his M4 fired from the end of his flailing arm, the shot shattering one of the lodge's front windows. The sound of autofire from the rear of the lodge reached Lyons. The front door of the lodge was dragged open. Lyons turned toward it as he skirted the front of the structure and saw Rick Ranelli step outside.
Fuckers!
The man spotted lions and opened fire. The stream of 5.56mm slugs dug dusty furrows in the ground as the ex-cop dropped, rolled, and came up firing. His initial burst ripped chunks of wood from the porch supports, throwing them in Ranelli's face. He stepped back, one hand reaching up to claw at the slivers embedded in the side of his face. The momentary hesitation gave Lyons his chance. Up on one knee, he steadied his rifle and fired repeated bursts that punched in through Ranelli's chest and throat. The traitor hit the porch rail behind him and flipped over it. He landed hard on the back of his neck, his body going into spasm, blood erupting in a fountain from his severed jugular. Lyons headed for the front door, keeping low as he passed the windows and went through at a run. The lodge's rear door led Blancanales into the kitchen. It was all pale pine and gleaming copper pots, and he could smell traces of recently cooked breakfast. The Able Team Commando continued on, his M16 tracking ahead of him. As he emerged into a short passage, he heard a hard footfall, then saw a man stepping through an open arch, rifle up. The guy opened fire as he caught a glimpse of Blancanales, sending a burst that shredded wall plaster. Blancanales had ducked down the moment he heard the sound, then swept the passage with tri-bursts. The shooter caught slugs in his ankle and calf, splintering bones. He stumbled against the wall. That offered Blancanales a target source. He raised himself up, pulled the M16 online, and placed his next burst through the guy's head. The close range gave the slugs added power, and they took out the back of the target's skull. Pushing to his feet, Blancanales moved to the arch, leaning around the edge to scan the wide expanse of the lodge's living room. He saw Brignola and the president, cuffed and sitting in chairs at the far side of the room. They were helpless and unprotected, so it would be necessary to keep everyone too busy or too incapacitated to take any action against them. In a split second, Blancanales took in the rest of the room. Senator Ralph Justin was frozen, his face registering shock at what was happening, and at a loss for ideas or action. And then there was General Chase Gardner, M9 clutched in one hand, a telephone handset in the other. Coming in through the open front door was Carl Lyons. He had cast aside his M16 and had his Colt Python out of its holster. The tableau held for a split second, then erupted in a round of gunfire that filled the room with its powerful noise. An armed guard was turning in Blancanales' direction, his weapon starting to rise in anticipation of a target. Blancanales shot the guard. The man went down in a heap, blood spraying the air as he crashed to the floor. Chase Gardner swung his M9 toward Lyons, his face almost calm as he pulled back on the trigger. The big revolver in Lyons' fist boomed repeatedly, the heavy sound of the powerful .357 Magnum bullets drowning out all other sounds. The shots from the Python poured in through Gardner's chest, shattering bones and tearing organs apart. The force pushed the general back across the room. He collided with a heavy armchair and fell across it. He lay with his head hanging, eyes wide open and staring up at the ceiling. One of those bullets from the Python had gone straight through the general, emerging between his shoulders. The misshapen slug had ripped into Senator Justin's arm, a fraction of an inch above the elbow joint, taking out a sizable wedge of muscle and flesh. A jagged sliver of bone jutted out from the torn, bloody fabric of the senator's expensive jacket. As the rattle of shots faded, Justin looked down at the blood that was starting to leak from the bullet wound in his right arm.
Oh, my Lord!
Lyons crossed over to where Brignola and the president were sitting. He nodded toward the handcuffs which bound them.
We'll get you out of those as soon as possible, sir. We can wait a little longer.
You guys okay?
Gadget's picked up a bullet. Jack's dealing with it.
Lyons put away his weapon. Blancanales had produced a cell phone and made contact with Stony Man.
We're clear. Both hostages safe and well. Make your call. It's a go.
Blancanales listened as further information was passed to him. Then he shut off the phone.
Mr. President, we have confirmation that the Iraqi problem has been resolved. Phoenix Force located and neutralized Cariza. The nuclear device is in our hands.
The president nodded his approval.
Now that is good news. Any casualties on our side?
A few scrapes, including a hip wound for MacArthur.
Oh, that's all I need to hear. He'll make the most of that.
As soon as we get back, Hal, I want everything about this affair on my desk. I'm going to be busy cleaning house on this one. Hal, I owe you.
Brignola raised his cuffed hands and pointed in the direction of Lyons and Blancanales.
No, Mr. President. You owe these guys and Phoenix Force.
I stand corrected, Hal. You're damned right I owe them. Once again.
Stony Man Full Blast is a Graphic Audio production. Stony Man, The Executioner, and Mac Bolan are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2005, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Richard Rowan, Jeff Baker, Christopher Graybill, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Nathaniel Perry, Nathan DeBoard, and Brian Rogers. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan, Brian Rogers, Nathaniel Perry, and Dan Smith. The Stony Man theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Chris Rowan, Matt Webb, and Nathaniel Perry. If you enjoyed Stony Man, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Mac Bolan and Ryder Stacy's Doomsday Warrior, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another Graphic Audio title.
The following preview is of a Graphic Audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
The Executioner Number 318, Code of Resistance.
So what is your plan?
Total extermination of the native population. I'm budgeting 2 weeks. We start with the coastal villages, one by one surfacing just offshore. We surround locals, round them up, tell them they are being relocated, and then slaughter them. We still have one minigun. Line them up, and each village should take about 4 seconds. We should have the entire coast depopulated in 2 days. Then we work our way inland to the valleys and finally the highlands. The bodies are burned and dumped at sea. We start Operation Deinfestation at dawn.
When Calvin James joins a force of armed natives on the tiny Pacific island of Pa'anui, Mac Bolan is sent to extract the wayward Stony Man operative. The island, rich in precious metals and gems, has become the target of a global consortium run by a madman who's hired an army of mercenaries to protect the group's interests, even if it means slaughtering every man, woman, and child. Mac Bolan's about to get more than he bargained for.
The chopper's spotlight suddenly lit up the bread and butter like the sun. The chopper was 200 yards out, just above the waves, and throwing rooster tails of ocean in its rotor wing. Bolan leaned out over the rail and began shooting. The helicopter was closing straight at the bread and butter's prow.
Beaver!
The bridge was directly between the chopper and Truman's weapon.
Beaver! Find him!
The ship shuddered, and the searing blast threw Bolan over the rail. A black wave slapped him beneath the surface, and his rifle slipped from his hands. Bolan descended a few feet and held position as the surface above continued to light up in orange flashes. He kicked to the surface. The bread and butter was burning. Bolan grabbed the rail and pulled himself aboard. The blast had knocked Heepy Heepy to the stern rail, where he sat stunned with his scalp split open.
Red! Fuck this! Where's the 90?
Red looked around himself.
Shit!
Bolan went to the M60. Bolan tried to spin the gun on its mount and found it hopelessly jammed. The helicopter was banking hard, preparing to make its second rocket run.
Red! Get Truman out of here! Abandon ship!
Bolan drew his Desert Eagle. Red took out some ancient-looking orange life vests from a deck locker and picked up the massive Tonkin. He stared at Bolan and his pistol, then tossed the vest at his feet.
Jesus Christ, come on! There's nothing more you can—
Move!
Burdick and Heety Heety went over the side. Bolan flicked off the massive pistol's safety catch and fixed his gaze on the glowing tritium spot, his front sight. The helicopter's spotlight blazed into light. His front sight turned black in silhouette against the harsh beam. The helicopter moved in for the kill.
A attacked at sea, his boat sunk, and all weapons lost, Mac Bolan will be extracting no one. Joining the native forces, he's up against hundreds of seasoned Russian, South African, Chinese, and Filipino mercenary soldiers with state-of-the-art hardware. The island rebels have spears, rusted World War II Japanese surplus, and a volcanic rage fueled by genocide.
The Highlanders watched the warrior dance steel through the air. The executioner rammed the blade straight up into the dying sunlight and held it high overhead. It gleamed in a hard orange line with the sun and the volcano behind it. Bolan's blue eyes blazed.
Pa'anui!
Don't miss one heart-stopping minute of The Executioner, Code of Resistance. For Mac Bolan, the revolution starts now.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.